You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Join us this Saturday for an all-new episode of The Athletic NBA Show, Saturday Slam and Jam, hosted by me, Andrew Schlecht. I'll be joined by my co-hosts Alex Spears and many of the Athletic beat writers that you know and love. We will recap the week of the NBA, play some NBA trivia, and just overall talk about the league that we love most. So while you're flipping your flapjacks, tending to your yard, or just sipping your coffee on Saturday morning, listen to Saturday Slam and Jam on The Athletic NBA Show.
Welcome to The Athletic NBA Show, Monday through Friday,
on The Athletic Podcast Network.
On today's show, we have Amino Hassan to talk about the firing of Lloyd Pierce and organizational alignment, as usual.
This is Nerdish, She Wrote, with your host, Dave Dufour.
With Mo DeKeel.
Are you ready to be entertained?
And Seth Partnow.
Hello and welcome to an all-new Athletic NBA Show. It's Friday. That means it's Nerd or She Wrote. I'm Dave. Seth and Mo are here. And it's been a year since Amin's been on the pod, so we figured what a great time to check in, Amin. Anything big happened in the last year since we've spoken?
It was at Sloan, right? That's when we did it. Remember we were like mocking people, elbow bumping. when I think about that whole weekend, I just cringe. I just think about like all the things. Everyone was making a big joke about the elbowing thing instead of and you're like, oh, you got hand sanitizer, and yet we thought we were really doing something. Everyone elbow bump, everyone have hand sanitizer, and then everyone go into this room with 1,000 other people and just sit there for an hour murmuring and talking and just expelling.
Oh yeah, and then,
but they were polishing the door handles with disinfectant, so it was okay.
Bless their heart.
Well, and then we all met in an upstairs bar, you know. So,
and when we say we, it was all you guys, because I stayed my ass in LA.
The bar was, man, it's like if you wanted to make it extra COVID-y, like let's drop that ceiling a couple feet, let's make it nice. Like, so if John Hollander jumps up, he'll hit his head on the top. You know, like it was so, and then let's pack as many people in here as possible. Let's make it hard to walk around. Oh, I mean, like everything about it. And the Utah Jazz played that weekend.
Like,
you could not create. I'm staggered that we didn't walk away from that thing, and it turns out 20% of the people who went to this conference were infected with coronavirus.
Amazing. I think we were probably 2 weeks early, to be honest with you. Mm-hmm. Like we probably just got in under the wire on that because it was about a couple weeks later, I think, like 4 weeks later, before Boston really had the big explosion,
right?
Like in April, so. But, you know, we've made it to this point. I mean, when we were talking about having you on, we didn't know Lloyd Pierce was going to be let go.
I think we knew, just not,
you know, we kind of suspected it. Yeah. Yeah. When they hired Nate McMillan over the summer, you know, that was kind of a sign to a lot of us that, okay, that seat is hot. But it feels like this season of all seasons, he probably should have gotten a little bit more leeway, I would think. I mean, they made a big splash in free agency. DeAndre Hunter comes out of the gate looking like found money. Like things looked good, and then the injuries hit him, and they got worse. I mean, seems to me like a lot of this was out of his control, and it's probably more about behind-the-scenes stuff than it is the actual performance. Do you think I'm on something here?
Yeah, this is something that I tweeted about before. I call it the Ballad of the Black Coach. And the Ballad of – hold on, as I'm trying to find the old tweet so I can just quote myself without butchering it.
That's okay.
I really like that.
We'll just have Jade throw some typing in there.
There we go. The Ballad of the Black Coach. Tie one hand behind the back. Apply blindfold. Spin them around in a circle. push them into UFC octagon, watch them get their ass kicked, surmise they're not good enough. Ironically, I said that about Nate McMillan getting fired. Right? So the idea here is that, was Lloyd Pierce the next coming of Red Auerbach? I don't know. Probably not. But he'd done enough in his time to show that he was a good coach. And more importantly, other coaches really respect him, particularly the ones that work with him in USA Basketball, right? So clearly he's not like a fraud. This is a good coach, right? You talk about their big free agency splashes of Gallinari, Rondo, Bogdanovich, none. All of them have been beset with injuries. None hasn't even played, or Dunn, excuse me, Chris Dunn. Dunn and none, I keep missing them. Chris Dunn, right? Dunn hasn't played. Bogdanovich hasn't played a whole lot. Rondo hasn't played, but a little bit. And then Gallinari has been in and out, right? And then you throw onto it, DeAndre Hunter's been hurt as well. And you throw onto it that they've had their fair share of kind of adversity, right? So it's just one of those things where you say, well, did he have a fair – could someone else have done a better job in this time? I really don't think so. But the funny thing is, kind of the murmurs and the talk is that, like, Trae Young wanted him out. And one of the things that Trae Young apparently complained about was there's no accountability. And that's a real, real interesting thing, because accountability is something that coaches apply when they feel like they have organizational support, right? If I don't feel organizationally that I have the power to say, sit your ass down because you didn't execute the defensive game plan, or you got to move the ball quicker. If we're going to have these conversations, I don't want to paint Trae as the petulant child King Joffrey, but I'm pretty sure no one in Atlanta is basically giving them tough love. This is organizational. And if they try to, there's always a higher power you can appeal to get around it. So for that to end up being his undoing, the very thing that he wasn't probably allowed to institute, there's a rich dose of irony there.
It's a substitute teacher thing, right? It's I'll wait for the regular teacher to come back, and then I'll ask. I don't have to listen to you. And it's a similar dynamic I think we see when maybe not quite the same, but a similar thing we see where, you know, oftentimes the coach is also the Pobo, and this doesn't happen as much anymore. We have a GM, and it's just like, yeah, the GM gets on the phone and it's like, all right, great, we talked. Tell me when whoever is able to talk, and then we can actually like make the deal. And it's just the same thing here. It's like, okay, well, when the person who's really in charge here tells me to, you know, pass the ball or play defense, then maybe I'll listen, but I'm not listening to you, substitute teacher.
Mm-hmm. And the irony there, of course, is, you know, Tibbs was a guy who was the dual hat guy, and he did it because he thought, finally, I won't have to deal with those shenanigans. And what ended up happening is the shenanigans just went over his head, because Tibbs thought, like, well, if I'm the president, then if they try to circumvent the codes, they still got to talk to me. And what you didn't realize, no, they'll just circumvent you right to ownership, and you still have the same situation. In Tibbs' case, he did everything in his power to have accountability, including having Jimmy Butler there to be kind of his capo in this game. But at the end of the day, they not only didn't respond to it, they circumvented that and got him out of here. And that's the part that pains me about Lloyd Pierce, because ultimately, if you're the reason you're fired is because your best player wouldn't buy in, I hate to say it, that's part of the job. Part of the job that's is the to job. Make him believe in you.
That's the big part. That's a big part of the job. I mean, I say it all the time. Coaching is a sales job. And you got to sell every day. You got to get the buy-in from the guys, and you got to get them to buy into your vision offensively, defensively, the schemes, the rotations, their role in it, and things like that. And, you know, like, I don't like how it happened for Lloyd Pierce, but I also there were things I didn't like about the team in general. Just in the few games they had in Bogdanovich, it was all still Trae Young. I was like, when they got Bogdanovich, I was like, okay, They're going to play Trae Young off the ball a little bit. They're going to have all these things. None of that came to fruition.
You know what I'm about to say? It's like, if he won't do it and I can't like force him to do it because organizationally I don't have that support, then how do I get him to change? And that's, to me, if you're asking, well, how can anyone get a change? I always point to the example from 2010. The Heat start 9-8. LeBron goes to Pat Riley's office and says, do you ever get the itch? And that's the moment. Pat Riley leans forward, looks him dead in the eye, and says, I never get the itch. And that's Pat Riley saying, like, that's the coach. You want to play for him? There he is. You don't want to play for him? What? All right. And I know everyone's going to say player empowerment, but the reality is, particularly for young players, because that's what you got to remember. Trae Young ain't no 7-year vet who's played in Sacramento and in Washington to know what it's like. From the moment he set foot in Atlanta, if they had him with the hot pokers to his feet, he wouldn't know any better. Like, this is life. I've talked to so many players who have played with one organization, and then they go somewhere else. And I've heard it both ways. I've heard guys who started with bad organizations and get to good organizations like, this is what you guys do? This is how you do it? Oh, my God. We weren't doing none of that back there. And I heard the opposite, where it's like they were somewhere great, and they were like, oh, my God, they're on my ass every day. And they go to another organization like, you guys don't do this? You don't do it like that? You just leave after practice? And they're shocked. They're like, and the reality is most players, they're very heavily colored by their first experiences, right? Remember, guys, La Bamba, what's his name? Juan Carlos Navarro, right? Played in Memphis for 1 year, right? 1 year, goes back. He went back to Spain. You know what he told all those guys? They're telling me this NBA is so hard. That shit is bullshit. There's a bunch of guys that don't show up on time. Because he got to a young team. He's a vet coming from Barcelona. Comes on a young Memphis team that really was kind of wayward and didn't have a lot of direction or discipline or whatever. So in Navarro's world, the NBA is, man, they just talk a lot of shit. They're not that much better than us. Because that was his experience. Now, had he got traded and played somewhere else, well, oh, I was in a bad organization. But the reality is Trae Young would have nothing to compare against. So if they had allowed him to be coached the way he should have been coached, maybe he doesn't feel as powerful as he does now to say, I won't play for this guy.
Why do I, through your that description, why am I picturing Boris Diaw in my mind's eye when you're talking about a guy who, you know, bad, good, bad, gets to San Antonio after looking like he was done. And then it's just like, okay, this is real. We're doing this now. And he's a very helpful player for them.
Well, it's kind of just fit in that sense, right? Like it just worked out for that in the Boris Diaw situation. Good in Phoenix, goes to Charlotte, falls apart, comes back to goes to San Antonio. And it's like, there he is with his other Frenchman, Tony Parker. They have the whole espresso thing going and all of these things. And that's just kind of, they accepted him for who he is, but it goes back to the organization because look at that organization top to bottom. Everybody's completely in line, you know, and they know if you have a problem with Pop, you're probably not going to be there that much longer, you know? And if you have, you know, situations like Amin saying like in Atlanta, it clearly doesn't look like they're in line from the front office to the coaching staff, at least, you know, that there's
definitely not
issues there just because they didn't allow Pierce to kind of get that, to have that comfortableness where he could say like, no, Trae, you're not playing right. You got to go sit down for a little bit. And I think that's where I think is the important thing that in the conversation is just the organization's got to do a better job of empowering their coaches.
They should have just made the move before the season started, right? I mean, at the end of the day, they hired Nate McMillan and we all know what that means. It's just like Alvin Gentry sitting on the bench next to Luke Walton. Like, we know that's the next guy. He's going to be the interim coach. I don't know if they're going to hire Nate McMillan to be the head coach. It would seem to me if you want a guy who's going to be friendly with players, I don't know if Nate McMillan's necessarily the guy. He's a very good coach, but I don't know if they want that kind of tough love from the head coach. Maybe, I mean, they need it, but, you know, does the organization want it?
And I think the important thing when you talk about that is, that is Lloyd Pierce going to get another chance somewhere else? That's what I really want.
He needs to,
right?
Yeah.
Like, cause the ballot of the black head coach means, oh yeah, we gave him a year and a half or however long it was, 2 years and a half. What more do you want? And it's just like, and by the way, this team is It's not like they're the, I mean, they're hovering around 500.
Right, they're fine.
Like, it's not like the world is falling apart. So it's just, and they, like we said, they have had health issues. I think there's a way to do this without doing him dirty like that. Even as I acknowledge, you know, he still has to win the guy over. And that's the hard part. The hard part is for black head coaches, usually save a Nate McMillan or Alvin Gentry. A lot of these guys, it's like, that was your shot. All right. Thanks. See you later. And that's the part that hurts. And by the way, make no mistake. The man was fired on March 1st and not February 28th for a reason. And also, the man's replacement was Nate McMillan, not just because Nate McMillan is an experienced, good head coach. There's optics, heavy optics at work here of no one's going to try and throw that card in our face.
And especially in Atlanta, and especially with Lloyd Pierce and the way that, I mean, he's been so, you know, front and center in everything that they've been doing in Atlanta. It's rough. And it was going to be rough if they let him go in the offseason, no matter what, right? Like, I think that it was going to be a rough move.
Dave, I'm going to tell you one thing that I was annoyed by was how many people in tweeting, the shock about the news, were quick to bring up, like, the stuff that he did in the community. And he did great stuff in the community, and I'm happy and I'm proud that he did. But, like, let's not act like, oh, he's a garbage coach, but he was a great guy, though. Because like, that's what it felt like to me. It was like people glossing over, he's a good coach. And he did a pretty good job given the resources available to him. Let's not gloss over that because of some great work that he did in the community.
Yeah.
I know, damned if you do, damned if you don't. But I'm like, damn. I'm like, right. Let's not do it that way.
I thought Pop's comments about him, and you mentioned the folks that have worked with him on Team USA. I thought Pop's comments about him were dead on. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't help but think about Brett Brown and the situation that he walked into. Mm-hmm. He gets hired to oversee the process. Mm-hmm. But I don't know that Atlanta, like, and maybe this happened, but did Atlanta and Lloyd Pierce have a conversation where they said, listen, we've got our process and then we're going to strike down the line, right? Like, are they planning this out when they're thinking about what are our organizational goals of the next 2 years, 5 years, things like that? Because it does seem like, and I obviously Brett Brown's a white guy, and white guys typically are getting a little bit more leeway in this league. I mean, like you just talked about. But it seems to me, if you're going into a situation like Atlanta, when they were tanking, essentially, when he took over, that you would need to figure out a way ahead of time, and it's tough as a first-time coach, but to have some more security somehow. And I just don't know how you do that because, you know, the reality of the situation is they probably still should be pretty bad, but they decided to spend money. Like, they sped up the timeline, which then sped up the expectations. And I don't necessarily know that this team was ready to be any better than it is right now, especially when you throw in the health part.
You're talking about the timeline. I think that's right. And I think an area where Brett Brown was luckier among everything else that you just said was that there wasn't anybody on those first couple Philadelphia teams who got the keys.
Right.
Or Henry Sims doesn't do it for you?
You know, Brandon Davis, Tony Roten. No. So he had a chance to establish himself as, you know, a sort of an independent power in that organization. And he had set up a system and people had said good things about it. Whereas, you know, day one, basically, oh, wow, Trey's good. And what are we going to let – what is Trey going to do? And I think there's also, you know, the fact that they traded Luka for Trey meant that there was a fair amount of
– I mean, there's
very little question that a lot was done in the first 2 years of Trey in Atlanta to make Trey look good so that trading him for Luka did not look bad.
You're trying to win the press conference, right? Like trying to just say, hey, look, we did all right. It wasn't just Trae Young. It was, and we got Cam Reddish and all of those things, you know, but it also goes to the fact that, like, you know, Travis Schlenk's trying to save his job. And that always, always in this case is the coach is always the first one to go. Cause you're not going to trade the player and the GM's the boss. So the GM is going to be like, well, I'm in this situation. Well, all right, I got to get rid of the coach just so I can try to survive. Sometimes I think we give the the front office guys a longer leash than they deserve versus the coaches.
I mean,
well, and isn't the front office ultimately responsible for the coach succeeding? I mean, yes, the coach has to do the job, but would you guys argue that Lloyd Pierce got the support that he needed from the front office? It doesn't seem like it from what we're hearing behind the scenes.
Are you asking about ideal or the real world? In the world in which,
okay,
in a world in which we live, well, one life raft. Sorry.
I mean that's reality, though. And this is where we always go back to, it starts at the top. Because if me, the GM, I'm getting pressure from the man upstairs, why is Trey sitting? Why don't you be on the bottom of Trey? Like, that's not just something I internalize and keep to myself. That rolls downhill. And when there comes time for someone to, be held accountable, it is the coach. And Mo, you said, do we give front office a leash? Yeah, but much like I said, part of the job of the head coach is to make his player buy in, his best player buy into what he's trying to do. Big part of the job, if not the biggest part of the GM, is to make the owner buy in.
Right.
And if I can't, then I've got to buy into what he wants and do his bidding. And so, if you want to believe reports from at the time that organizationally they wanted Luka, and ownership wanted a young American star, young black star in this black city to sell and all that, that's where it starts. It starts with, look, we traded this guy, we traded away the rights to this guy so that we could take this guy. And again, this is not a knock on Trae Young. He's a very fine young player. I think he's going to be a multiple time all-star and he'll be a big part of the success in Atlanta. All I'm saying, which I've said from day one, from draft day and before that, is however good he is, he ain't that guy.
Right.
And basketball people knew that's the guy. Well, some basketball people, you know who are the teams. Number one, Phoenix. Again, guy upstairs says, I want the guy that played at my alma mater down the road. Even though the head coach who coaches it is telling you, this dude's a real deal.
Right.
So
that's the craziest
right.
one.
So that's crazy. And then two is Sacramento.
Well, Sacramento.
And that one might be crazier because Vlade, you had the inside track.
Right.
Like nobody else. And that's when Vlade decides, I'm not going to be the xenophobe who likes everyone from the Balkans. I'm actually going to open it up. I still don't understand that one. And so, and then Atlanta, you have an owner. who is pushing an ownership group that's pushing for a certain player. And so those are the three. And unfortunately for those players, their names are going to be connected to that dude forever. I don't give a damn what kind of offense you run. Forever, you're going to be connected to Luka. And by the way, I would say Dallas has similar issues in terms of,
oh yeah,
Luka's on ball way too much. I know he's great. Yeah. I know the numbers are good and they're winning now and all that, but long term, it can't be that way. So,
but they did what Atlanta did after the first year. You know, like they get the Porzingis deal, right? And now they're locked in and it's like, you know, have they capped their ceiling? We talked about this a few weeks ago.
That's a different
with these two teams specifically, right. But it is different because you've got Rick Carlisle, right? Like, Mark Cuban is not tossing Rick Carlisle under the bus.
Also, Kristaps Porzingis and Danilo Gallinari are not for various reasons. Like Porzingis hasn't lived up to the hope of what they were getting. But you're taking a different swing if you're going for one guy and the other.
Right. So what about some of the challenges that Nate McMillan's getting ready to walk into? You know, Mo talked about this a little bit. Like, obviously, he's been with the team since the offseason, but they had an abbreviated camp. Mm-hmm. It's not his team. It's not his offense. Doesn't have any of his trademarks. You know, like, what the heck is he even going to do for the rest of the season? I mean, they're not going to win a title. But is he going to be able to do anything of note? Like, is he going to be able to put his fingerprints on this team in any way?
I love how their first game, they like the possessions were in the 50s or something like that. Right. Like, it's Nate McMillan time.
Are they running? How many catch and shoot long twos did they do in that game? Because that's the Nate McMillan offense, right?
Back in Portland, man. You take it away back. Yeah, it's just the slow death crawl, and this is what we're gonna do. I mean, look, I think obviously whenever you are in that situation, you get that like nice effort to start. It helps when Jimmy Butler doesn't play, right?
But right.
The question is: A, is this sustainable? And then B, is that the best way to use your superstar, who is not a big guy, right? The up and down, up tempo offense favors slight players, right? Because the more you slow it down, the more it's a grind, the more taxing each possession becomes, because you're playing against set defenses. You're not attacking an open floor as they like to do. So if you're going to play slow, that's the answer. We've been a bad defensive team. How do we fix it? By playing slow as shit. Like, what kind of impact is that going to have on Trae Young physically?
Right. Well,
hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
It's just funny in the sense of changing the styles. Cause I mean, you were in Phoenix when Terry Porter got let go and Alvin Gentry got moved up into the interim coach. Mind you, I was with the Clippers, and your very next game was a back to back against us. And you put up 140 and 142 the next night.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like, you know, it was almost like everybody was relieved.
Somebody poked Omari in the eye, you fuckers. Who was it that? Or was that in practice? I can't remember.
I don't know. But, you know, it might have been me. I mean, for all I was so annoyed with how bad we got our asses kicked two games. I was just like, this is unbelievable. But it was just a change in style. And almost like it felt like the players were like, all right, Terry Porter's out. We got Alvin. Let's roll. You know, you could correct me if I'm wrong. But, like, it almost feels like with the stuff we're hearing with how much the guys were waiting for Lloyd Pierce to get out, like, if we're getting some of that from the Hawks with McMillan a little bit.
There's a in sort of you guys are familiar in like the finance, the notion of the dead cat bounce, right? If you drop something, stop from a great height, it hits the ground and bounces back up. And this is something you see across sports. It's, you know, in soccer, European soccer, you fire the coach your next three games. You've basically got like the star from Mario. Like you're invincible for a couple of games. And I think you see that because, you know, players know what's going on. They know the end is coming, and you're just kind of like, well, okay, that's over. Now we can kind of relax and just play. And there's probably a little bit of that's going to go on for, you know, funnily enough, Atlanta probably will waste most of it because it'll be, you know, into the All-Star game, that sort of honeymoon period.
Seth, you know what that's called, right? In basketball. Well, it's called the dead coach.
Yeah, the dead coach. Well, I didn't want
shout out to Basketball. You guys remember that blog? Does anyone remember that blog? Basketball. They were good. They would come up with these terms, and like as soon as you hear the term, you're like, I know exactly. Yeah. One was in pickup game, like the basketball martyr, right? What's that? That's the guy who no matter what happens won't call foul, even as like we're losing because you clearly have budget, but you have like some kind of like pride.
One of our interns in Milwaukee was totally that guy. Anyway, we just never Pete.
There's always
Pete
one.
Herman
There's
call foul.
Yeah, it's like but to answer Mo's question, typically yes, it's what Seth just described. The players are already not bought into this dude. The last days usually turn a little ugly, and then once he's gone, whether it's conscious or subconscious, there's a better effort given in those first few games, right? In our case, it was different because we literally went back to our system that was like for us, we were the number one offense in the league every year. Every year, in every category, right? And Terry was hired to be our help us get better on the defensive end. And he came in, and I'll never forget this. We had the coaches retreat, and they come back, and I asked one of the coaches, how'd it go? And he's like, well, all we did was go over offense. We're like, oh, so you guys are like teaching him our offense. He's like, no, we're going over his offense. I'm like, what was his offense? It's Flip Saunders' offense. Like, all that bullshit ass 700 screens so that Rip Hamilton can take a contested mid-range jumper? And he's like, yeah. I said, well, maybe he was just going over that because when we implement some of that stuff to the team, he wants you guys to feel as knowledgeable and well-versed on it as he is. Like, it doesn't sound like, oh, I don't know, right? So we get to camp, and the first 2 days of camp is all offense, and it's all this Flip Saunders bullshit. Rest in peace, Flip Saunders. Your playbook was terrible. And so, like, the players notice. They're like, what the hell is going on? And we're like, just bear with them. And we're looking at each other like, what the hell is going on? And finally, I think Steve was like, hey, maybe the guys want to talk a little defense, right? And so that's when we transition to defense. And as we're going and we're playing, the offense is just this awful garbage-ass offense. And so they have the conversation with them, hey, man, like, maybe want to implement some of the stuff that, you know, made us the best offense in the NBA every year. So he takes 21 Chase, but instead of having the big come down instead of drag screen, and our biggest Shaq, by the way, they make him go straight to the block, thus eliminating any spacing advantage that running 21 is supposed to provide. And he won't call it 21. He calls it pistol, which is because it's pistol action. So, like, it was just kind of like anything that he did offensively that was supposed to be more like our old stuff was done drag, kicking, and screaming. So when we let him go and Alvin took over, the first practice, I'll never forget, Alvin said, this is 21. It's not called pistol. It's called 21. Big, you're either going to come here and set that drag screen for the ball handler, or you're going to set a flare scheme right here, or you're going to screen away, and da-da-da. And like, we just, like, we did almost summer league style. 21, dribble at, and then four pop. And we scored 140 points because it was the offense that everybody knew and loved. I don't know why you would ever go away from it. And so, you know, that was more of what I think most people think when a coach is fired, like schematically something changed. Like, no, that one was actually schematic. And also everyone was sick and tired of playing with Terry.
And in this case, though, in Atlanta, they definitely should not switch their offense.
No,
at all. No. Like, please don't.
Well, I would say this,
especially now.
I would say the decentralization of their offense is necessary, but not to the extent of we're gonna 70 possession game like we're Washington State, right?
Yeah.
Or what's my man now? I guess he's not at Washington State.
Virginia, right?
In Virginia, yeah. What's my man?
Virginia
Bennett, right?
Packline.
Bennett.
Yeah.
There you go. Yeah.
But like it's hard to even implement that without a camp or anything like that. I think right. You know, part of it is they're going to try to do it with the All-Star break afterwards. I think Nate McMillan has even said he's going to, you know, get a chance to try to put in his stuff after the All-Star break. But ultimately, because I agree with you, I mean, they got to change that stuff up. I just don't know if you're going to be able to do that in season at this point, which also makes me wonder again, like, they weren't that far from being in the play-in tournament and potentially in the playoffs under Lloyd Pierce. Like, I feel like making this move, I'm not 100% sure this is going to help them in the long run.
I think I think the important thing, Mo's absolutely right. Like, you know, you
stop the podcast right there. We're done. You
know, this happens more often. Yeah, happens.
This happens every week.
Yeah,
it happens every week.
And we should stop it every time. I'm just saying, it's over.
Throw the ball up in the stands. We're done. I think the difference is, like, you guys in Phoenix had something to go back to that everyone kind of already knew.
Yes,
right.
You know, especially like in a normal season, you don't have a ton of practice time in the back half of the season anyway, because everyone's beat up and you're just like, okay, shoot around, do church league for the guys who aren't playing. Everyone get their vitamins, blah, blah, blah. So you normally don't have, and then this year with the compressed schedule, you're going to have even less. And there's just not time to do something as much as you might, you know, see. It's like, this isn't great, but like, at least everyone knows what we're supposed to be doing. Maybe we can teach it better and execute better and kind of get away with it. And then next year we do some new stuff, because, you know, I feel like the biggest danger is, unless you're going to go super simple, is that you do a bunch of half learned stuff and then it's just like an unholy mess and you end up ISOing, going like 1-4 flat and ISOing with 10 seconds left every possession because that's all that can be remembered.
Yeah, I mean, I think you bring up a great point in that the Hawks offense was not really the issue, right?
Nothing special.
Nothing special, and it could be better. Maybe not even numeric, because by the way, that's a thing too, right? You can say the Rockets' ISO ball Harden offense was statistically the best that they could get out of that group, while also acknowledging maybe a less statistically efficient offense would have been better because it's harder to stop. Same thing here. It's like, it's not perfect, but it's good enough that you can keep doing what you were doing until you can make the wholesale changes that Seth is talking about.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The 7-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Let's fast forward the timeline here a little bit and look ahead to the offseason. And I just think this Atlanta organization is sort of in a fascinating spot, especially now that, you know, they don't really have a coach. They have an interim head coach. Who the hell are they looking for this summer? It's not going to be another first-time coach, I'm guessing, right? They're going to want someone with some experience, in particular with a good guard-heavy offense. I just don't know. I mean, Mike D'Antoni would be fun, but I don't think that that's going to happen. So what is this team ultimately going to be looking for to get the most out of these guys? I mean, clearly they don't feel like Lloyd Pierce is the guy. So,
right. You
know, what's the archetype, the coach archetype? Is there a Nick Nurse floating around out there that's ready to like be a first-time coach of an NBA team, but also to sort of push the envelope a little bit with the unique tools that they have on that roster? I don't know.
Well, I think you're right. I don't know if a first time head coach is going to be their answer. I think this is where they go into the retread aisle and say, well, look, get me someone who's done it somewhere. And it's got to be some. Go ahead.
So we're looking at like Mark Jackson. Like, is this going to be the call we're going to get?
Is it Mark Jackson? Is it Jason Kidd? Is it right? Because it's going to be a whole big.
What about Chauncey Billups?
Chauncey Billups might be the name, but that's a first time guy.
Right.
And mm-hmm. You know, I don't know. I mean, it's a good question. I mean, that by the way, is one of my big things about when you talk about firing a coach. Is there a plan here?
Right.
Do we know where we're going to go with this? Right. Like. Or does Nate have a real shot at this? That's another question, right? Melvin Hunt's another guy on their bench who's been there for a long time and been around the league for a long time. Does he get a shot? I don't know. I don't know. I don't know that they have a plan. And if they do, then if we're thinking about names that have experience, you got Mike D'Antoni. Who else? Jason Kidd, Mark Jackson,
I got a name.
Brett Brown. Who?
How about Dawn Staley?
I mean,
she's run a program. She's a really good coach.
Okay. Okay.
Why not?
Sure. But like you understand you're running a massive risk in you just fired a coach who had never coached at this quote unquote coach at this level.
Right.
So you
at this level,
so you're going to go get another person who's not only never coached at this level, but never even assistant coached at this level. I don't believe that. Don Staley's never been on an NBA staff, right?
I don't think so.
No.
All the questions that come along with it. And by the way, I'm going to say it, even though nobody likes saying it, one of the reasons why I believe we haven't had a woman head coach yet is because teams are worried if we fire them, what's the optics going to be?
Right.
Right.
I think that's a real thing.
Yeah, so there's
and it's going to be tricky because we have there are so many qualified women that have been assisting. I mean, in Dallas, you've got Jenny Buchek, you've got Lindsay Harding, you have people with diverse basketball experience that have played, that have scouted, that are going to be in these interviews.
Right.
I mean, this summer, I think we may have more female coaches interviewing for NBA jobs than we've ever had.
Right. Right.
I think that's a good point. I mean,
but I think that's like, that's the last barrier is how do we reach a point where the powers that be feel comfortable that I can hire and then eventually fire? Cause every coach gets hired to get fired, right? They all, other than Pop and Spo pretty much are the only two. Like straight up, I know people like to throw Steve Kerr in that list. He's not. Like his expiration date's a lot longer than everybody else's, but he's not on the Pop and Spo level. And similarly, those are the two organizations where the stuff that we talked about at the beginning about, hey, I want to do it this way. No, you're not. That doesn't happen there, right? They are as lockstep as it gets. That's the ideal. And everywhere else is basically, we try to be it to an extent. And then there's some point where, I will turn and I'll stab the knife in your back as well.
I mean, even those two guys were hired to get fired, and then you know some stuff happened, and now it's a little bit job for life, and you know you know all credit to them, they earned that, but they were even those guys were had a fair amount of prove it and you know good fortune of the Hall of Fame talent that they had.
Well, Pop was a GM, right? Pop always had the insulation from day one. And he was just really good at delegating in that regard. That insulation never eroded for him. And again, he knows how to manage up, right? Spo, you could make that argument, but like Spo had been in the organization for so long that there was kind of a built-in, like the only way it wouldn't have worked for Spo is if he had come out and fallen flat on his face immediately. And he didn't, right? Like he came in with that young team that they didn't think was going to be any good and started that season bad. And then by the end of it, they're fun and excited. They're going to the playoffs and they're, you know, they're giving the Charlotte Hornets all they can handle or whatever. And so I think that kind of solidified the belief, because if Spo wasn't hired to get fired, if Spo was hired to get fired that first year in Miami, 9-8, he would have been gone.
Right.
He hadn't done anything. Yeah, like he's not Pop where we've won 60 games and won a championship, whatever. They were good. They weren't great. So that was the moment. And that was a great moment of organizational bravery. When you tell the best player in the world, I know what you want. That's not how we do things here. And it played out for them. Or maybe it didn't because he left 3 years later.
Oh, no, they got two championships out of it. They're fine. It definitely worked for them. You know, I just don't think the Hawks are that brave of the organization.
No.
Like the organization we're talking about.
Upstairs, man.
Yeah, and I think it's going to just be, honestly, when to your answer your question, Dave, it is just going to be a retread coach. And we might all go, oh, that's a great hire or whatnot and things like that. And it might work out and all of those things. But I don't think they're going to go to a first-time head coach. I don't think they're going to go to somebody that, you know, hasn't coached in the league before. I honestly think it's just going to be the retreads. I think, you know, every name you guys threw out there in terms of Mark Jackson, Jason Kidd, and D'Antoni is going to get a look. All of those guys are all going to be in contention for it. I mean, we're going to hear Jeff Van Gundy's name again. All of those things are going to come flying around. I think it's just going to be one of the retreads coming this offseason, and then we'll see how we do, because I just don't think the organization themselves are going to hang out and be brave.
So my hot take here is it doesn't matter who the hair is the coach. It's, you know, what's the football expression? Jimmy's and Joe's, not X's and O's. Like the
right.
Such
a football thing.
Yeah. No, I'm not a hand egg guy at all, but still it's this roster is not a championship roster, and the moves they made this offseason, if anything, probably it maybe got them their ceiling as of right now a little higher, but it got their long term what they can be lower. And so that, you know, unwinding some of that and putting themselves back on that from a roster standpoint is, you know, obviously the coach has a role to play in that, especially in terms of bringing all that can be brought out of, you know, DeAndre Hunter and Kevin Huerter and Cam Reddish, and if they choose to keep him around John Collins. But it's the, you know, the expectations haven't been well managed for this team for the last 2 years, and thinking some coach is going to come in and it's all going to be fine is just getting right back on that treadmill again.
There's one more name we forgot. We mentioned him in a different context. Alvin. Because he has a relationship with Travis. And again, don't take it lightly. Black head coach coming in Atlanta. And Alvin is Mr. Personality, obviously, and has experience coaching gifted guards. Steve Nash and Steph Curry as an assistant. So that might be another name to look out for.
The only reason why I didn't mention Alvin is because I think he's going to be the interim head coach of the Sacramento Kings very soon.
I'm going to tell you this. Whatever happens in Sacramento, if I'm Alvin, I'd rather be in Atlanta.
I get that. All right. So, Amin, at the end of these shows every week, we like to talk about what we're looking ahead to. I figured All-Star break, it's a good time. What are you looking at for the second half of this season? Like, hopefully, you know, the COVID protocols don't have as much of an impact, you know, as they did in the first half. Hopefully guys start getting healthy and, you know, we get some sort of sense of normalcy in the season. So what are you watching for in the second half as we look at ahead to the playoffs?
Health in general, all encompassing health. One of the biggest reasons for Utah being as good as they've been is they're healthy. They haven't gotten hurt. They haven't really been hit by COVID, which I wonder, living in Salt Lake City, it makes it a lot more likely for you to stay at home and not really go out. But that's the reality. It's the healthiest teams right now. If you look at the best records in the league, the Nets are the only team that can say we've dealt with health issues and we're still right up there near the top. But everybody else has come down to health. And for me, you know, just seeing who's going to be healthy in the second half, the Lakers, again, were up there and then health hit them. And we're seeing what's happening to them in recent weeks. Then the other thing is that's really interesting is what's going to happen 5 through 8 in the West? Because this might be the year where it's like, depending on how healthy Anthony Davis is, if you came in a time machine right now and said to me, I'll never believe this, Western Conference playoffs, 4 upsets in the first round. This is the year like where I could believe it. Anthony Davis is hurt. The Lakers lose. The Jazz play against like the Nuggets, and the Nuggets give it to them again. The Suns play against the Blazers, and Damian Lillard goes supernova. And then the Clippers and, I guess, the Spurs, and the Clippers fall short. Like, that can happen. It's not likely, but it's also not like 1 in a billion like it would be any other year.
Seth, what about you, man?
But aside from taking a break, because there's no basketball to watch next week.
I mean, that's a big the interesting thing is to kind of a similar idea is there's a lot of these top teams need something. You know, the Clippers could use a guard. The Nuggets
could use a defensive wing.
Yeah. Who's gonna be the other side of those trades? And everything is so compressed. And with the play-in games, it's just like who is out there to go get? I mean, you're talking about you can pick guys from the Thunder, the Rockets, and the Timberwolves, but who? And that's it. And that is going to make like any sort of trade that might swing something in the second half just harder to get done.
People keep saying go get Thad Young, like the Bulls are just going to give away Thad Young. It's like, no, man, the Bulls want to make the playoffs.
Yeah, or Garrett Temple.
There's a bunch of – I mean, I think you just made a good point there. There's like 25 teams that are probably looking to upgrade.
Right.
Because, for both of you guys, I mean, the upset factor in the playoffs is actually alive for the first time in years. Mm-hmm. Like, we might really get – I mean, I doubt we're going to get an 8-1, but if the Nuggets are somehow the 8 seed and Utah's the 1, I'd probably put some money on that. Mo, what about you? What are you looking at the second half?
On the side of Amin was looking at the West in terms of 5 through 8. I'm looking at the East 5 through 25, it feels like. It's just because it's all combined by like 2-game difference. You know, we're talking about the Bulls. They're 2 games away from being the 5th seed, you know, right now. It's along those lines. Like, it's so bunched up. I want to watch how all of those teams play it out because, honestly, a good week can put you right in position to be a team that doesn't have to worry about the play-in tournament, and a bad week can have you going home into the lottery early. So it's going to be something I'm really going to be fascinated about in the second half of the season, just watching the middle of the East kind of play out a little bit.
I'm watching the stealth tankers. I'm watching the teams that are I'm watching the teams that are really angling themselves. Well, I mean, Memphis, are they a stealth tanker? I'm looking at the teams that really want a shot at Cade Cunningham. And that's what I'm going to be really paying attention to the second half. I think the battle for seeding is going to be interesting and all that. But the teams that are going to just try to give themselves a couple of extra ping pong balls, I think it's going to get blatant because it's going to be late this year. You know, teams are going to pull that. They're going to pull the plug so late that I think it's going to get.
Amin has a look on his face. Go.
Yeah, I know.
I have a question. If a team is trying to win but is losing anyway, does that make them a stealth tanker? Because I want to nominate Sacramento as a stealth tanker. They think they're trying to win.
Oh. Well, I guess if they keep Luke Walton around, then yes. That's going to do it for this week, folks. Thanks to Amin for coming and hanging out, his yearly appearance. For Seth and Mo, I'm Dave, and we'll talk to you guys again next week.